Hello everyone, this is the Epiphany Podcast. I am your host Blue, and here in the studio with me today is Dr. Coco Nishi and Dr. Nelly Chen. Epiphany is the Asian Pacific Islander focused community based, so it's a space for us to talk about mental health and a lot of aspects about our cultural identity. And when I joined these workshops, they hosted with the workshop in correlation with the counseling services at Capoli Center. And when I was a participant, I thought that was really cool to have a space like this. And then they also accepting a lot of interns every year. And that's how I become an intern. I was like, hey, it would be a really cool idea to have a platform like podcast, because everybody listening to podcasts these days. So it's really cool just to like invite everybody in, or like you can listen to this anywhere. And yeah, that's how everything started. And I know that Coco and Nelly has a lot of to talk about. They have prepared everything, so I'm really excited to hear what they want to talk about. So back to you guys.
We talk a lot. We don't get a chance to talk a lot, and I think it was really important for us to find a way to merge our different worlds. So we do so much mentoring and work in the private sphere, I feel like, mm-hmm. behind closed doors. So in almost literal way, we are now exposing what we do in private behind closed doors.
Yeah.
So we're broadcasting out now.
This is true. And I think for me, what's so exciting about this space is that
Boba.
Our tea, this is how it starts. So I'm drinking a winter melon milk tea.
Gotta have my
less sugar.
Earl Grey regular milk tea with some.
Nice. Curious what you all drink. And we also have some pokey sticks in the house. We have mint chocolate and crunchy strawberry. Because this is a tradition, and we're excited to, like Nelly said, open up kind of our space to you all. Mm-hmm. And I think what's interesting, I've been listening to podcasts, especially since the pandemic hit, and I'm always like, oh, these people are so wise, and they sound so smart, and that's so cool. And then now that I'm sitting here, I don't feel like that at all.
No, but I also listen to podcasts that are entertaining, and I feel like
this is
I'm more interested in sharing entertainment with folks and helping people to see that we are normal. I mean, well, like Asian normal, Asian auntie normal.
Define what normal.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, there aren't enough voices like ours in the world. And I think we hear that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
We're not like everyone else. And I think we've gotten into a place in our career where we are not afraid to say
to
what we
real.
Have. Yeah, we'll say what we need to say. And
right.
I will say, so Boba Happy Hour was part of the original Epiphany.
Yes, Boba Breakdown.
Yes, and this, it stuck.
It did.
Because that's what we do in private. We go out for Boba, right? We're not going to the bar.
That's our version of a coffee shop.
Yeah.
You see,
or a bar or whatever.
We're always talking about, like, real things.
Yeah.
So we're bringing that into the space.
You can't talk about personal stuff without food and drink.
Exactly. That's how we come together.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think you listen to podcasts for entertainment. I listen to it for, I think, the connection to stories that resonate with me. And I noticed just even sharing that I want to sound smart and professional and have like a podcast voice and cool music in the background. It's for show, right? It's this like idea that I have to appear like I have everything together. I have to say the right thing.
Well, who are you doing that for?
Not me.
Well, yeah, not you, but like, who are you trying to be professional for? Who's them? I think that's always the question, right? Like, who am I trying to be professional for? Who am I trying to impress? Because I don't know about you, but a lot of times when I'm trying to impress, it's not my family. I'm trying to impress
institutions,
white folks,
yes.
People in power.
Oh yeah.
And I, because I know my family values that prestige, and if I can get the awards and the titles and the degrees, then my mom will be proud of me.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's interesting, because I feel like I still seek it from them.
Oh, without a doubt.
Like, no matter what.
I
could throw
like,
all these awards at their face, and they're like, but you didn't get that one.
I tell my mom all the time, I was like, guess what? I was interviewed by so-and-so, and they're just like, was it on the evening news? And they're like, no.
I failed.
I know. And then I told her, so I'm the president of Asian American Psych Association right
yes,
now.
Yes, you are.
And she goes, But what about the American Psychological Association? Oh,
so that's not good enough.
It's not good enough.
Okay, yeah, that's, I think, another thing, right? It's never good enough.
Yeah.
But I think what you're talking about is something that I hear oftentimes from the students that come to us. And, and in the Boba Breakdown, what we talk about a lot. And just having a space to be ourselves and to kind of figure things out. And I think that's, I think, what we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, just want to chime in a little bit for me. Personally, as a student, especially with Asian community, getting achievement is not something that newsworthy, like Nelly said. It's something of expectation, like it's already happening. So if you don't have it, then what's wrong with you? But if you're having it, like, yeah, you should have it because we know you're good. Like, why don't you get it?
It took me a lot of years of being mad at my mom for me to realize that what she was saying is you're good enough to be president of the entire psychological association.
Mm-hmm.
So how come you didn't get that? And how come you didn't run for that? Because you should do that.
Yeah.
And
so expectation.
Yeah. Her expectation was that I'm better than what I'm doing. But all I could hear, because I've been Americanized, right? I was born here. All I could hear is, Mom, don't you love me?
Right.
Like, I just wanted her to be like, I'm so proud of you. And, like, of course she's proud of me. Yeah, They're always proud of us.
But there's a but, right? Like, I'm proud of you, but.
But why do I have to tell you? That's what I'm hearing. Don't you know you're my daughter? You are the likeness of me. You're my mini-me.
Therefore, you should be.
Right.
All of it.
I think there, in Asian cultures, I've noticed that, like, let me compare this to, like, school.
Break it down.
Okay, break it down. In some classes, you start off at 100%, and then you can only lose points.
Oh, I hate that.
I hate that. Well, but then that means if you never did anything wrong, you're perfect, right? In other classes, the majority of classes, every time you do an assignment, you add points.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you're starting off as worthless. And then you're adding value every time you show a product.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That
is so American capitalism.
Capitalism.
You are only as worthy as the product you create.
Productivity.
Right? But the Asian way that I'm now seeing my relationship with my parents and my world is you are perfect at the get-go. You start off at 100%.
And you're losing points.
And you're losing points now every time you But we only see what we did wrong and where we lost points.
Yeah.
And not realizing that our 100% didn't get knocked down because we didn't achieve better. We stayed at 100%. They're trying to get us to 1,000% or something, right?
Yeah.
And I think that reframe helps me a lot, right? Because then I don't see my mom as like, because when I look at my mom as like, you know, I see like this dirty face of like, you didn't do it. Right? But what if wasn't doing that at me, but she was doing that at the world around me. Like, how come they don't see her? Because I see my kids like that now. We're right, but we've been like grew up in a place where it's so individualistic, and our parents have not been able to translate for us. And I don't have peers that have enough knowledge around it to like go, duh, this is how it is. Like my cousins in Vietnam, they have that with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know. We're lost in translation.
We are. Yes, yes, we are. And I think that's why we're creating this space. Oh, why don't you tell them about your Ask Auntie idea?
Oh, well,
talking about
so
not having peers to share this with.
Well, I've had that language in my head for a while, ever since, do you remember during the protests, there was an auntie that wore a purple jacket and she held her middle finger out?
Yep.
Yes. I have had this thought since then, actually, that I was like, oh, yeah, Auntie is the one that, like, you know, tells all.
Mm-hmm.
She's not Mom, because Mom can't give us praise.
Because
in our culture, I was just telling someone this. Giving praise means you think the person needs to be built up, right? Giving praise also will attract the demons to come and steal it from you. So this is why we say to babies, like, oh, so ugly, right? Do they do that in Japanese culture? They do that in Vietnamese culture. They always call the baby ugly.
They do, and they put, like, in the Vietnamese culture, they pick the worst name for the kid because they think, like, oh, if the kid's name is too pretty, like someone's gonna steal it,
yeah,
or like it's gonna be bad luck. So they give like the really, really bad name.
Yes, this is why. And my mom told me this too. And when my brothers got married, I was like, why are you spilling so much dirt to like the new mother-in-law about you know my brother? She'd be like, because I want them to know the truth, so they won't return him. So because if I don't tell them the dirt, they're gonna think that I'm hiding all the secrets so that you'll let them into the family, or they'll think that I don't know my own son. And so they have to tell the dirt as part of like the ritual, right? But okay, so back to the moms have to be critical because they need to tell the truth. They think they're the only ones that will tell you the truth. Everyone else will give you praise. You don't need me to give you praise. Okay, so they're hypercritical, which then turns us into hypercritical. But it's Hansi who's the truth teller. Right, and I feel like that's where we are the truth tellers. So the line that I was, Coco and I were texting each other, she wanted to talk about shame. So then the line I came up with is so bad. So you shamed your family. Let Auntie tell you how to fix it. We'll do our best. Yeah. It's kind of like office hours. It's kind of like a podcast, and it's kind of like Boba Coffee Shop. Yeah, and it's also kind of like, you know, Mahjong, or, you know, the family party where, you know, all you wanted to do was go get that egg roll, but now you're stuck in a conversation with us. Yes, I feel like that's what this is. It's ask the question that you need to ask from someone who you don't have to explain what life at home is like. And if we're going to judge you, we'll at least tell you. Yeah. That's what truth telling requires that. We're too old for that. Should we take it for a ride? Let's try a question.
Questions on anything?
Anything
at all?
We'll tell you if we don't want to.
Right. Okay. I'll think about it. I'll come back to me in a little bit.
Okay. Well, then I'll ask you a question. No, wait.
Can I ask you a question?
Oh,
about
okay.
Shame?
Oh, ask me a question about shame. Go for it.
I don't know why shame.
You always want to talk about shame.
I think it's shame. And it just made me reflect on, you know, where that came from for me. And I had this random, so I don't have a question. I just, like,
tell me.
Thinking about it, of just where does this come from and what memories did this elicit in me? And I'm just curious for you, if you have any early memories or a situation. When I was talking to her, and then she went to go, this is also related because she practices piano. And I grew up playing piano, so Asian, right? And there was a anniversary party for my grandparents. Big deal in Japanese culture. So I forget, I think it was like the 50th or something. I don't remember how old I was, but I felt like I was pretty young. And I remember my mom was saying like, oh, you know, you should, you know, play a song for them. Like, show off, play a song in celebration, because that's what my grandparents want. Like, no, but... So I remember at this huge party, there was all these people, all these family friends and everything. And they were like, okay, go play. And I was terrified. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the piano and I refused to do it. I was so
you
scared.
You refused?
I was so scared.
No,
I thought I was going to mess up.
Well, you better to mess up than to not
so
do
my
it.
Brother sat next to me and he was trying to like get me to do it.
Uh-huh.
They're like, you know, trying to just encourage. My mom got next to me. They're like, hey, we'll buy you something. Like everything, they're bribing
mm-hmm.
me. And I was so scared I didn't do it.
And then what?
And then I left. and then other cousins and stuff did stuff, and I felt the most ridiculous amount of shame.
Oh.
So much so that 10 years later, like I was a teenager, and they had their like the next anniversary party, I went up and freaking played piano. Like I brought a keyboard.
Did it solve the problem?
No, like it was ridiculous that like my 10-year-old, 8-year-old self was still like feeling shame from that incident. And it wasn't even about celebrating my grandparents, it was like redeeming myself, and it was so ridiculous. And so I was just thinking about that this week, because it happened with my daughter, just feeling like, I felt like the way she looked made me think about that. So I'm just curious.
Oh, wow.
That's why I was stuck on that idea.
So it's interesting because I've been thinking a lot about this. So the word for shame in Vietnamese is sao ho, but I didn't hear that whole phrase. It's like two words. I didn't hear that word growing up.
Does it literally translate to shame?
I don't know. The second word is like the equivalent to shame, but the first word in direct translation is ugly.
Oh.
And so together they make the word shame. The second word, I don't think means anything, right?
It mean on itself it mean like very different thing, but we also use it in like other contexts, like ho tang is another term to say for shame. For so ho, I mean like soho is a little bit more like embarrassed in a way, but shame, I have a different word for shame that I in my head,
what
it's passed it? Away. It's called nyok. Like,
oh, I've never heard that.
Nyok, I think it's a little bit
can
weird.
You
so,
how
would you
shame a child?
How would you shame a child?
Shame.
If you say,
shame
okay,
me,
so in English term, if you say like you shame our family, you like, mày làm nhục ba gia đình mày quá, or something like that.
So
it's just a very degrading term. If nyok is the most degrading term I can think of, soho, you can say like, oh, it's a bit embarrassing, but it's fine. But then nyok, like you put the whole shame on your family.
Yeah. So I didn't hear that word growing up that much. I heard soho more, and so that's the word that I always thought of when I was like, oh, so shameful. But my mom cut that even more. So growing up as a kid, the word that I thought was shame, or like the thing that brought shame to my, like the English version of shame to me, was just being called ugly. So she would say like so wa, like she says that all the time, where she'll just literally say like, that's so ugly, like that behavior is so ugly, right? And I remember she used that word a lot when I wanted to run around and play with my cousins. I have mostly male cousins in the U.S. So all these boys wanting to run around in the streets, and my mom would always put me in these really lacy, frilly, like, quinceañera-looking dresses. Oh, they exist. and I was like, sure, I'll wear it, because, like, cool, like, I can twirl and stuff, right? But I wanted to go play flag football. So I would just take off my shoes and go. And my mom would catch me. So she would of course come looking for me to be like, have you eaten? You better eat. And then she'd be like, so what? Like, that's not what girls do. And I heard it the most around gender stuff. And then the memory that came to mind when you actually asked me was one where I was older, and then I was in college or right after college, grad school, around that time period. My mom, it was a family party, or like she had her friends over, and everyone was like, oh, is this your daughter? And then she was like, yeah, she's home from grad school or college or something. And they all asked me a question, like, oh, what are you studying? What are you doing? And then I like went, I just like started telling them. Like I was proud. I wanted to make my mom proud. So I started telling them all the great things I'm involved in. And then my mom, then I like took the dishes and took them to the kitchen. My mom came into the kitchen and said, like, oh, what? And I was so shook, because I thought I did a good thing, but she was so ashamed of me. Like, it felt like she was ashamed that I, like, lacked. I don't know if she used the word, but, like, that I wasn't being humble. I made her look bad. I made her look bad. And how dare I make her look bad in front of her friends?
See, I think that's similar to me making my family look bad for not performing.
Yes.
Stupid piano piece.
Well, but I thought I was doing that by showing off.
Right, yeah.
And I wasn't supposed to.
You weren't supposed to. How? Yeah.
So I never understood that. I should ask her about that.
I was going to say, like, what were you supposed to do then?
I don't know what I was supposed to do. I don't know what she expected of me, but I just remember that feeling of shame. Like, that was the one as an adult, that was the feeling that I had at that moment of, like, truly feeling like, oh, wow, like, I'm such a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
I made my family look bad.
Is that where the percentage dropped? From 100 to lower?
You know, she didn't know that I was capable of being so bad, you know, and I never understood how.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like in Vietnamese culture, I don't feel like I can ask. Or at least it's never worked. I ask my mom all the time, can you teach me how to make XYZ?
Yeah,
she won't do it.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, oh, why don't you know? I'm like, because you're my mother. Teach me how to make it. She's like, just pay attention. I'm like, I am. I don't understand. Like, she would, like, put, like, a bowl of sugar, and I'd be like, a bowl of sugar? Like, that's a lot of sugar.
Yeah, my grandmother just pours. She goes, ta-da, 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 ta-da. I was like, I don't know what that means. Like, what is a ta-da, ta-da, ta-da? I have no
just
idea.
Just counting. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I guess, but it tastes like crap when I make it.
Well, so that's the thing, right? And she doesn't teach. You're supposed to observe.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to learn by doing with her.
Right.
But
not communicating.
No.
Right.
No. Don't communicate.
Which is why we're having this podcast, because we're trying to figure out how to communicate all the things that we didn't get
to. And I don't feel like I'm in relationship with my parents on a regular basis in, like, a multi-generational house the way that we were expected to. And so a lot is being lost.
What do you think, Blue?
It's really interesting of how, because I know that Asian parents want to show off the kid, but in the most humble way possible. That is a really weird concept, because they're going to be like, okay, so for me, my mom would, like, expect me to be, like, on top of the class, right? But if I dare say that I go to a supplemental study, she would be like, no, why would you say that? You're good on your own. You don't need any extra help. But instead of that, I bust my butt off just to, like, go to extra classes. So, like, I know the content outside of class already. But every time my mom bring it up to their friend, be like, oh, he just studied on his own. And that's a really common thing in Vietnamese culture, too. Like, everybody knows that you're good because you go to the extra stuff, not on your own. But on the newspaper, whoever got, like the valedictorian kind of thing, it's always the same narration of, like, oh, this kid works a lot, but he also dedicates his time to study on his own, and it's just on his own. There's no supplemental. It's just his pure mind.
It's just natural.
Yeah, it's just a natural thing. So it's just weird. It's just like, I think that's like the shame part, I guess. So
yeah, they are definitely ashamed. I mean, I have been really ashamed of how I became successful for a long time. And so
fascinating.
Yeah, I failed the second grade. Could not be more ashamed of a 7-year-old than failing second grade. But my dad, I will say this. My parents, when they're ashamed of something, and I've noticed that they don't always blame me.
Hmm.
They definitely blame the system.
Hmm.
And this could be because my parents are refugee boat people. So I feel like their mentality is like, they're special, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
they are a special breed,
yes.
for having gone on the journey that they went on,
absolutely.
Right? So when I failed second grade, my dad was like, in front of my teacher, was like, uh-huh, sure, do what's best for her. And then he went home and he said, we're moving. And we moved. And so that he could
school.
Moved to the newest school so he could tell them that I was in the third grade.
Nice.
And then they got my paperwork that said I was supposed to be in second grade, and it was too late.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So then they were just like, well, we'll just see how she does, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the hustler in my dad.
Mm.
You know, like, he'll make everything look good, but in practice he's like, no, I know what's best for my children. And I'm just gonna do it. I don't need your help. I don't need you to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's the ultimate, I will apologize. He will very much be like, oh, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Right now.
Go ahead, put her in second grade. But, you know, like, he wouldn't talk about it. And then, you know, I didn't get into college. I didn't get into the colleges I wanted to get into, and so I went to community college. And that was a shameful thing. And so they told everyone it was because I wanted to save money. That was okay. right? Like, to save money, to go to the
reason, right?
Right, and so they were kind of ashamed of it, and then, you know, graduate school, same thing. It was just like all these little missteps. And it wasn't until I became truly successful that according to them, I think I became successful when I became a professor. No. I don't think I made it yet.
Are you sure about that?
That's not the real president. My dad is still convinced I'm going to run for office one day, so he keeps trying to, like, leave me out of some of his shady business. Because he's like, oh, but she's going to run for political office. I'm like, Dad, you're still my dad. Yeah. But anyway, so once I made, like, a certain level of success, I became more comfortable talking about my past. So similarly, it's like, are we allowed to talk about our missteps to normalize failure or needing help? We all know we need it, right? Like, we all in private are telling each other to take this class, take that class, do this for, you know, do this to get ahead, but we don't want to talk about it out loud. And I feel like they're, to our parents, they're afraid, like, that their friends aren't going to think highly of them. But I feel badly that I think that we're afraid that white folks are going to think we're cheating the system.
Ooh.
So we are no longer afraid of one another.
Right.
I'm not afraid that you're going to judge me, that I'm taking an extra class to help me learn to write or do math or whatever. I'm afraid that white folks are going to think I'm not smart enough, that I don't deserve to be here, that I wasn't as smart as they expected me to be because I'm Asian. And I don't deserve resources and I don't deserve help. And I feel like that difference between generations is a really scary one.
Yeah.
It's different when it's just friends, but now we're talking about people in power. We're afraid that people in power are going to know that we need help. How are they going to give us more help? They're the ones allocating the funding and the resources. And we keep things like Epiphany under wraps because we're afraid they're going to take it away from us. That's what happened with anti-Asian hate this past year. Is that our quote-unquote dirty laundry made it out of our communities into the public. So myself and so many of my students are numb to Asian hate because it has always been in our community. Grandmas have always had their chains ripped off of their necks in the inner city, in City Heights and other communities in San Diego, in National City. This is not new. But it is new for a lot of people who are new to the country, and it is because it feels too much like, you know, impoverished areas in their countries of origin. But it's always been here. Part of this is that there's a class issue. And we have undereducated Asian Americans don't know the history, you know, and the rest of us are numb because we're like, what, this again?
Yeah.
We've done this already. Yeah. This isn't new. I'm not surprised by this. I know. I'm surprised someone got a video footage of it, and now I get to be re-traumatized every time it comes on. I know. I'm sorry. This is the problem. I got so much to say. Nobody wants to listen to this. No, but I think in general, don't we all feel that way as Asian Americans? Like, we have so much to say, but people think that we're so quiet. And it's not because we're quiet. It's because they don't give us space to talk. They don't listen to us when we talk.
We have this space. And I think that's the core of it, Nellie. Like, that's what you and I were talking about. I think that's what I've been talking about with students. Is that's why Epiphany exists, because it's that space. It's like one of our small spaces, but it's a space where it can actually talk, be heard. And, like, I'm sitting here listening to you talk about your, quote, failures. And it's fascinating because I don't ever hear that. Like, I don't see that. That's not really modeled for us, right? And so I appreciate you just being that, bringing that realness, because I think a lot of our students are shocked to hear that, you know, we failed something, or we didn't get in the first time, or like, I had the worst SAT score possible. I'm still traumatized by that. I suck at SATs, or to standardized tests in general.
Yeah.
You know, I failed organic chemistry.
I suck at math. Can I say that?
Well, I suck at organic chemistry. I had physics. Oh my gosh.
I changed my major because of O-Chem.
You know, in one of the AP exams, there was a question about, like, someone jumping out of with a parachute.
I didn't remember this.
And because I didn't know how to answer it, so I just drew a picture. And I was like, maybe they'll give me a point. No, I didn't get any point.
That's a great story.
No points.
I
felt good about my effort.
Well, I think this is, it's important for us to talk about where we didn't meet the mark where we wanted to.
And then it was okay, and now look at us.
Yeah, I was pre-med too. And then
so
I switched majors. And I'm really glad that I did. And you know what? People always ask me this. You know, how did I get my parents to be okay with me being a psych major?
Yeah.
I made them a presentation.
No way.
It was a poster board.
Of course you did.
You did. I researched which were the top universities. I also had this secret mission to leave San Diego. And so...
This is an amazing story.
Yes. I wanted to transfer to UCLA or University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. And they were both tied at the time for second best psychology programs in the country. And I was like, oh, they can't say no to that.
I love that you beat them with like knowledge that they wouldn't necessarily know about, right? Like,
well, this is what you always say, right? Is figure out where you have common ground
mm-hmm.
to achieve the same goal. And
right.
they could not say no to my request to be in a top psychology program.
Right? Yes.
I just want to be the best mom and dad.
Why wouldn't you support me in that?
Right. And they were afraid the whole time.
Wow.
But look, at my wedding, my dad said that, he was like, you've always scared me. And you turned out okay.
is that our words to live by in this podcast? Like,
yeah, I'm a little bit scared of taking all these new steps too. And I feel like, well,
we figure it out.
You get used to being the only and the first at everything.
I'm hoping until now, because I think that's what I'd like
mm-hmm.
the space to be. That's why we're asking you all to ask questions, because
yeah.
I think, you know, you and I in our journeys, we often didn't have someone to ask these questions or to bounce ideas off or just to be heard, like you said. And
yeah.
I think that's why I enjoy so much talking with you, because we're always just, I think, reconnecting on so many things that have happened to us where we didn't have a space to process or figure out or know that we were okay or it wasn't our fault or whatever. So,
well, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this for our community,
yes,
and not for someone else who is not necessarily a part of our community. We came into this
mm-hmm.
work to be with our people,
yeah.
And if we're not going to get to be with our people, I'm not doing this work.
True that.
So here's another medium to doing that.
Cheers, boba.
Cheers.
Boba.
I can't really hear it.
Ask us questions. We're an open book. Otherwise, we'll just keep talking at you.
Let's see. What do we want to leave with? How do we want to end this?
Mm.
What is your hope for this podcast? What do we leave our community with for today?
Mm. I want our Asian American Pacific Islander students, faculty, staff, our people, to know that they're not alone, and it's okay
mm-hmm.
to be in community, to be together. The anti-Asian biases that we've all been socialized with have prevented us from being able to come together and
mm-hmm.
not feel the judgment of being a clique.
Mm-hmm.
And I want us to feel comfortable to be us and to keep achieving our goals, because however you show up here makes you Asian American. No one, that's the box you check.
Right.
So be how you're going to be, because that too is Asian American.
I have a question then. How would you define the difference between community and a clique?
Ooh, yeah, good question.
I think I can't define community, because that depends. I'm a community psychologist by training, so that's a complicated scholarly question for me. But clique has gatekeeping.
Hmm.
To me, a clique is someone who, a clique is something that is exclusive
mm-hmm.
in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Only some people are allowed in and some people are allowed to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a community then is, there are lots of iterations of community outside of that. And I would like to believe the Asian American community, Asian Pacific Islander community, is as big as we want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be as inclusive as we choose it to be.
Yeah.
And that I believe in self-definition.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to believe that I want to be with the community of people who choose to be with us.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if I believe in meeting people where they're at, then even people who I might consider to be a part of our community but aren't ready to,
mm-hmm.
but they would know that when they are ready,
they're
we
welcome.
Are here, and
mm-hmm.
they are welcome to join the table, right? Our table is that we sit on the floor, though, so just be prepared for that.
You gotta take
yeah.
your shoes off. Too.
You gotta take your shoes off, because that's dirty. but you know, those, we all can abide by some of those rules. And you
yeah.
know what? If you had to keep your shoes on for some reason, I'm willing to listen to reasons. And I'll make space for that.
I feel like that's another podcast.
It is
just
another podcast. We
that.
Have metaphors for days.
We do.
Oh, what is your hope?
Is my hope
for this podcast?
Oh gosh. I mean, I have such a long list of hopes. I think, you know, when we started, Kathy and I started Epiphany five years ago, the initial hope was that we would create a space that would generate enough momentum for the institution to give us a resource center and to give us Asian American Studies and to give us more programming and more funding. And so for it to have happened so quickly, I mean, quickly in the sense
I'm
of like
it's half a decade,
true. I thought it was going to take 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that it does now exist, I think my goal, I mean, Epiphany has always been evolving. It's always been changing, but the heart of it has been, as the students have described it, is a space for growth, for evolution, for development, for thriving, and for helping you discover who you are, you know, and discovering your community. And so my hope is that it continues to do that and continues to expand. But I really hope that the students feel like their voices can be heard and are valued here. Because I don't think that always happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope that it continues to do that for them. And I just hope we get to hang out more because this is fun.
Yeah. The institution keeps us so isolated and separated from each other.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's why this took so long.
Right.
Because we're always so dang busy. We're not able to hang out.
And he used to have boba.
Although, yes.
I forgot
I,
to put boba
you can't,
in yours.
You can't
I know.
See. It's okay. I still accept you. I still appreciate you.
But
my,
don't forget
my,
the boba next
my,
time. Right?
My boba is not part of my drink, but it's okay. It's okay.
I won't forget next time. And we'll put double dose.
There we go. Is that a wrap?
That's a wrap.
Is this our first one? Done? I just
Yay.
Want to say thank you to the fabulous Dr. Nelly Tran for spending your time with us and sharing your brilliance and badassery.
Thank you to Blue and to Dr. Nishi.
Thank you to Blue for holding it down.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening in to our first episode of the Epiphany Podcast. Special shout out to Dr. Coco Nishi and Dr. Nelly Tran for being our first guest and co-host today.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you enjoy and see you the next time.
Yay!
Good job.